Chapter 36 Byatt Watcher. Sergeant Pietro Russo knew why he had volunteered for this job. In many ways, it was a realization of a childhood dream. He had become fascinated by telescopes when he was only 6 or 7 years old, and much of his youth had been spent collecting lenses of all shapes and sizes. These he had mounted in cardboard tubes, making instruments of ever-increasing power until he was familiar with the moon and planets, the nearer space stations, and the entire landscape within 30 kilometers of his home. He had been lucky in his place of birth, among the mountains of Colorado. In almost every direction, the view was spectacular and inexhaustible. He had spent hours exploring in perfect safety the peaks which every year took their toll of careless climbers. Though he had seen much, he had imagined even more. He had liked to pretend that over each crest of rock, beyond the reach of his telescope, were magic kingdoms full of wonderful creatures. And so for years he had avoided visiting the places his lenses brought to him, because he knew that the reality could not live up to the dream. Now, on the central axis of Rama, he could survey marvels beyond the wildest fantasies of his youth. A whole world lay spread out before him. A small one, it was true, yet a man could spend an entire lifetime exploring 4,000 square kilometers, even when it was dead and changeless. But now life, with all its infinite possibilities, had come to Rama. If the biological robots were not living creatures, they were certainly very good imitations. No one knew who invented the word biot. It seemed to come into instant use by a kind of spontaneous generation. From his vantage point on the hub, Pietra was Byatt Watcher-in-Chief, and he was beginning, so he believed, to understand some of their behavioral patterns. The spiders were mobile sensors, using vision and probably touch to examine the whole interior of Rama. At one time, there had been hundreds of them rushing around at high speed, but after less than 2 days, they had disappeared. Now it was quite unusual to see even one. They had been replaced by a whole menagerie of much more impressive creatures. It had been no minor task thinking of suitable names for them. There were the window cleaners with large padded feet who were apparently polishing their way the whole length of Rama's 6 artificial suns. Their enormous shadows, cast right across the diameter of the world, sometimes caused temporary eclipses on the far side. The crab that had demolished dragonflies seemed to be a scavenger. A relay chain of identical creatures had approached Camp Alpha and carried off all the debris that had been neatly stacked on the outskirts. They would have carried off everything else if Norton and Mercer had not stood firm and defied them. The confrontation had been anxious, but brief. Thereafter, the scavengers seemed to understand what they were allowed to touch, and arrived at regular intervals to see if their services were required. It was a most convenient arrangement, and indicated a high degree of intelligence, either on the part of the scavengers themselves or some controlling entity elsewhere. Garbage disposal on Rama was very simple. Everything was thrown into the sea, where it was, presumably, broken down into forms that could be used again. The process was rapid. Resolution had disappeared overnight, to the great annoyance of Ruby Barnes. Norton had consoled her by pointing out that it had done its job magnificently, and he would never have allowed anyone to use it again. The sharks might not be as discriminating as the scavengers.